This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we wrap up our series Classic Films and Movie Icons with writer and director Spike Lee, and with actor Samuel L. Jackson, who's appeared in several Spike Lee films, including Do the Right Thing, Jungle Fever, Mo Better Blues, and School Days. We'll start with Spike Lee. His first feature was the now classic 1986 film She's Gotta Have It, which earned him a place as a central figure in independent cinema and in black cinema. 30-some years later, he adapted the film into an expanded 10-part series of the same name, which is still available on Netflix. That was the occasion of my most recent interview with Spike Lee, which we recorded in 2017. The central character in She's Gotta Have It is Nola Darling, a young artist who loves sex but isn't interested in a committed relationship. She's seeing three men, each a different type, but each wants her to himself. In the 1986 original, Spike Lee played one of Nola Darling's boyfriends, the B-boy Mars Blackman, who's deep into hip-hop culture. I asked Spike Lee to describe the character.
Well, Mars Blackman is the original B-boy, the original sneakerhead. He wears a chain around his neck that says Mars. He was wearing the fresh Air Jordans. We call them FOBs, fresh out the box. I mean, Mars is just crazy. It's funny. I asked my grandmother. I didn't have a name for this character, and I asked my grandmother, who lived to be 100 years old. My grandmother put me through Morehouse and NYU and gave me the seed money for She's Gotta Have It. Not that she was rich. She just saved the Social Security checks for 50 years. She taught art. And I was the first grandchild. But I asked her your name. She said, I had a crazy uncle named Mars. I said, bang, all right, that's what it's going to be. His name is Mars. So the only reason why I played in the film is because we didn't have any money to pay for an actor to play Mars. So my whole life changed after that, not just because of the film, but because two individuals, Jim Riswell and Bill Davenport at the Wyden and Kennedy Advertising Agency, their client was Nike. They saw the film and got the deal to pair my character, Mars Black, with Michael Jordan. And that changed the world.
So I get the impression from this that you never planned on acting?
Nope.
Well,
I don't even like it, really, to tell you the truth. I don't even do it anymore.
Why don't you like it?
Because I'm not an actor.
Okay.
But Mars Black became so popular that, people wanted me seen other stuff. So I played Half Pint and Shorty. My best performance, if I may say, of my limited acting skills is Mookie and Do the Right Thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was good in that one.
So I want to play a scene with you in it from the original 1986, She's Gotta Have It. And this is a scene where it's the first time Nola invites your character Mars up to her apartment, and Mars is surprised at how spacious and nice it is and how much of her artwork is around. So here's the scene.
Dad! Nola, it took you long enough to invite me up here.
I don't let just anybody up here.
Am I supposed to be anybody?
You're not anyone. That's why you're here.
Yeah, it took long enough. That's nice.
Thank you. My birthday's May 19th. You know what that is?
The 19th of May? Am I supposed to know?
You're supposed to know.
I'm supposed to know.
Yes.
Why?
It was Malcolm's birthday.
The 19th?
Uh-huh.
Of May?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? That's cool. He was down by law. Yeah. So this whole place is yours, huh?
Whole place.
I likes. What's the rent?
It's cheap.
Yeah?
Yep.
You know, we could put a divider right here. You'll have a roommate. Me, you'll never know I'm here.
You're right. I'll never know. How come every time I let a guy up here, the first thing they want to do is move in?
Well, you work, you got a nice crib, and you're fine.
What makes you think I want somebody to take care of?
I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I pay my own way. I'm not looking for no meal ticket. So what do you do? What's your job?
I'm a layout paste-up artist. I do mechanics for magazines.
Yeah. I know what that is.
There's something about you.
About me?
Uh-huh.
Good or bad?
I haven't figured it out yet.
You let me know, right?
You'll be the first to know.
You let me know?
Mm-hmm.
You let me know?
Yeah.
You let me know?
Sure.
You let me know?
Yeah.
Good.
Spike Lee as Mars Blackman in Do the Right Thing. So Your character, as we heard in that scene, repeats certain lines over and over, most famously, please, baby, please. How did you come up with that kind of repetition for your character?
I can remember what the next line was.
Oh, seriously?
True. I kid you not.
Oh, so that's where you kept repeating?
I can remember what the next line was. I was going to keep repeating the line I'm on.
That's hilarious because it's such a kind of quirky, funny characteristic. So it really works.
Well, it's an accident.
So Brooklyn is so important in your life and in your movies and on your hats.
Oh, can I just say something
go
real
ahead.
Quick?
Yeah.
It's the Republic of Brooklyn.
Okay.
The Republic.
You know, it's so funny.
The Republic.
I grew up in Brooklyn, and it was so
where?
Sheepshead Bay.
Why? Did you go to high school in Brooklyn?
Yes.
Where?
Sheepshead Bay.
I went to John Dewey.
Where was John Dewey?
Coney Island.
Oh, I used to go to Coney Island a lot.
Yeah. You went to Nathan's?
Oh, absolutely.
You went on a Cyclone?
Yeah, but not a lot. It's a little...
The Wonder Wheel?
A little much for me. Yeah, the Wonder Wheel.
The Wonder Wheel.
And then all the bumper cars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyways, Brooklyn was not... No one was claiming that Brooklyn was kind of hip or cool or a republic that I was aware of when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting to see what Brooklyn has come to signify. Like, so that's quite a change. So when you were young, before you lived in Fort Greene, you lived in another neighborhood, right? Cobble Hill?
Yes, Cobble Hill. The Lees were the first black family to move into Cobble Hill. Cobble Hill, up that point, had been historically Italian-American, working class neighborhood.
And why did your parents move there, knowing they'd be the only African-Americans?
Oh, my mother, you know, who was running things, said, you know, we need to get it. My mother always wanted a brownstone. So we rented two floors in a brownstone, Warren Street, between Henry Street and Clinton Street in Cobble Hill. And then my mother said, you know, we got to buy a brownstone. So we bought our brownstone on Washington Park between Myrtle and Willoughby in 1968 for like $45,000. Back then, the realtors wouldn't even use the name Fort Greene. They would just say downtown vicinity.
So when you were probably very young, when your parents moved to Cobble Hill and it was an Italian-American neighborhood, what was that like for you as a young African-American boy?
Well, we got called the N-word for like 2 weeks. And then when it finally dawned on them there were not going to be hundreds of black families following Lee's, and the neighbor was going to go black all overnight, then we were just like any other kid. Two weeks after that, the N-word started. A lot of my friends today are these guys I grew up, you know, in Cobble Hill at a very young age, especially the Tucci's, Louie and Joe Tucci. Shout out.
So what was the school like? Was the school mostly white?
Oh, I went to public school, PS 29. After a couple of years, you know, some Puerto Ricans moved into the neighborhood. But I had a great, wonderful childhood. And I'm sorry. I'm glad I was a child. I mean, we forget these video games. We played street games. We weren't just sitting in front of television. We were playing stickball, stoop ball, softball, two-hand touch, Johnny on the Pony, Ringo Livio, Down the Sewer, we just played.
Down on the Sewer? Was that the last one?
It's a top game. You know, spinning tops?
Yeah.
Well, the sewers had a hole in it, and the goal was to knock the other guy's top down the sewer.
we
were imaginative. It was creative. We made up games. We played on the streets. We were running around. There was physicality. I mean, running bases. I mean, we had fun. And the summertime was the best because it wouldn't get dark till like 9:30. So you didn't have to come home till it got dark. So you leave the morning, you leave the house in the morning, and you didn't have to show up till it got dark. Oh, it was joy.
And your father was an artist, a jazz musician, bass player, composer, also yes. plays some piano. So what did you learn about what it means to be an artist and try to support a family from watching your father?
Oh. Well, I learned that there's nothing poetic about being a starving artist. I knew that. And I knew that I wanted to, as the user of one of the greatest lines from The Godfather, I wanted to wet my beak. If my films made money, I wanted to be able to get my fair share of the money that's being made for my artwork. I just knew that I just saw my father struggle. Great, great, great musician. That there's nothing cute about being, you know, poor. At one time, my father was a leading jazz bassist, jazz folk bassist, played Bob Dylan, Judy Collins, that's my father on Peter Paul and Mary's Puff the Magic Dragon, Theo Brickell, Odetta, all those things. And when Bob Dylan decided that he wanted to go electric, everybody else in the folk world did too. And so my father to this day has never played one Fender bass or one electric instrument ever. And up to that point, my mother didn't have to work because my father was in demand. But when he made the decision that he was not going to play electric bass, my mother had to become a teacher. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I looked at my father's integrity. But on the other hand, he had 5 kids. But to him, it didn't matter. He was going to play electric bass.
Did you resent that? Did you want him to play electric bass so that the family would have more money?
Nah. And I'm just very fortunate that I was able to use the great talents of my father. He scored all my films in NYU Film School. He did the score for She's Gonna Have It, School Days. A great, great, great score for Do the Right Thing, Mo Better Blues. So I was very happy that it came around. So I was able to employ my father.
What kind of music did your father introduce you to?
Jazz.
And you have shout-outs to jazz in the series.
I mean, here's the thing, though. We, growing up in my house, we had to sneak to listen to Motown and the Beatles. My father would hear that. He said, turn that bad music off. It was jazz. Only music could be played out loud when he was in the house was jazz. And if it wasn't jazz, you had to turn that mess off, as he would say. Turn that mess off!
Did he introduce you to Johnny Hartman, who I think I heard in the new version?
Oh, yes. My father, I mean, he didn't play with him, but he knew everybody. Everybody knew him. I'll give an example. Late in his life, I did a video for Miles Davis. It was called Tutu. And the
album
was called
Tutu. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes. And the first thing he said, Spike, I know your father. I love your father's work, so I'm not going to curse you out. First of all, it would have been an honor for Miles Davis to call me MF-er. That was his favorite word. So I wish he would have called me MF-er. But he said, you know what? I know your father's Bill Lee. Great musician, great composer. So I'm going to leave you alone. True story. I still think about that today.
So when your family moved to Fort Greene, you were probably, what, around 10?
11.
11. Okay. So what was it like for you to move to a predominantly African-American neighborhood after living in Cobble Hill?
It was great. Fort Greene was black and Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. It was great because we weren't renting anymore. We had a big old house right across the street from Fort Greene Park.
Did you ever take piano lessons since your father had a piano and played?
For a minute. The one that was a really good pianist was my brother David. And it was his piano teacher was in Harlem. So as much as I'm the oldest, I had to drag his ass on the subway every Saturday to take him for piano lessons. Boy, I hate doing that. Do I have to do it? Yes, you do. You're the oldest. Back in the day, When your parents tell you to do something, you had to do it. There's no negotiating, none of this stuff. You had to do it.
Have you been that way as a father?
Nope. I mean, nowadays, I'd be sent to jail.
What do you mean?
If you hit a kid, you go to jail.
Oh. Did your parents hit you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it wasn't murder, but if you said something, my mother said, I'll slap the black off you. And what was worse, because like many black families in the North, when summertime came, your parents shipped your black ass down south to get a break. So you would spend the summer down south with your grandparents. And down south, they don't play. They get the switch. You know what a switch is?
Mm-hmm.
It was brutal because they make you choose the switch you get beat with. And if you choose a too little switch, they'll pick their own switch was three times the length of the small one you picked. Woo, boy!
What earned you getting hit with a switch?
Oh, it didn't matter. They didn't like something. You go get that switch, son.
So is that
what I do?
Was that an effective form of punishment for you, or did it just like really make you angry and want to rebel more?
No, that switch hurt. Woo, Lord. And it would be so hot, and there was no air conditioning, and those mosquitoes would eat you alive. Oh, my God. And then the area made fun of us because we talked different, and we could understand what people were saying. I remember one summer we came down south with afros. Because afros took a while. Everything takes a while to get down south. And when they saw us with afros, they looked at us like we were three-headed Martians.
Were there things you were told you couldn't do in Alabama because of race? Racism, was the line different than it was
in Brooklyn? See, there weren't any white people in Stone, Alabama. So it was not like we were in Selma. Mm-hmm. Or Montgomery or Birmingham. We were in the sticks.
Mm-hmm.
So we rarely ever saw white folks when we went down south. So people might call me Mr. Brooklyn, but my parents are from the south. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia. Spent many summers there and also went to college in Atlanta.
In Morehouse.
Yeah, my father went to Morehouse. My grandfather went to Morehouse. And my mother and grandmother went to Spelman. These are two historic black schools. They're across the street from each other. In fact, my grandmother lived to be 100 years old. I know I said that before. I mean, being redundant. But her grandmother was a slave, yet she had a college degree. So I come from a long line of educated black folks.
Were your parents always stressing the importance of education when you were growing up?
Yes, educators. Educators.
So what did they do to make sure that you got a good education?
Well, the best thing my parents did, not just for me, but my siblings, though, was they exposed us to so much stuff. And it paid off. My mother was dragging me to Broadway plays, off-Broadway plays, museums. Man, I didn't want to go to that stuff. I wanted to run them down the streets. But my mother would take me and my siblings. I mean, she was dragging us while we were screaming. But every time we came home on the subway, we would say, you know what, that was good.
What's one of the shows that you saw that you really loved?
Oh, one thing was memorable. My mother took me to see Bye Bye Birdie at Radio City Music Hall Easter show.
So this is the movie?
The movie. And the reason why the opening credit sequence of Do the Right Thing with Rosie Perez is dancing, that came from Anne Margaret dancing in the beginning of Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, that's great.
But here's the thing, though. My mother was – so my love of cinema came from my mother. My father hated movies. And so since I was the oldest, I was my mother's movie date. My mother's wanting to introduce me to Martin Scorsese. She took me to see Mean Streets when that film came out.
What impact did that have on you?
I said, Mommy, this movie's crazy. What if somebody could Google what year Mean Streets came out? I was definitely underage to see that film. And I've told Martin Scorsese that story many times, and he laughs.
Spike Lee, it's been great to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. And again, I'm a fan.
Oh, thank you.
And it's been a minute, so let's do it every time I have a project, all right?
Let's do it again, absolutely.
My interview with Spike Lee was recorded in 2017. Coming up, we conclude our series, Classic Films and Movie Icons, with actor Samuel L. Jackson, who's been in several of Spike Lee's movies.